Organize Me Radio, Episode 8, Clutter and Mental Health. I'm Naima Ford Goldson. Welcome to Organize Me Radio. I'm Naima Ford Goldson, and I'm here with Dina Smith, the owner of Closet Therapy with Dina.
Hey, everybody.
And today we are going to talk about how clutter affects your mental health.
Oh, boy. I'm excited.
All right, Dina. So tell everybody about you and how you started in this business.
Well, I came to the Atlanta area back in 2004, and I was working part-time at the Container Store. I came to Atlanta on the cusp of opportunity and tragedy. I was moving from Dallas to Atlanta, getting a divorce, and I was working at the Container Store part-time. And I quickly got kind of promoted through the system because I didn't know I was working at the flagship store in Dallas. So I apparently was doing things right. But I noticed in retail when I got promoted to management that I did not have the opportunity to spend a whole lot of time with my actual family and child. So I wanted to do something I was passionate about and do something that I was skilled at from working at the Container Store, but I really wanted to pursue coaching. And so I went back to school, got a master's in counseling because I had done some research, and the best coaches have a background in counseling, and I already had a background in business. So long story short, I started organizing in 2014 full-time. My business at that time was called Organized Life Works. And I was kind of separating the two worlds. My counseling world was one thing that I did, and then my organizing world was another thing that I did. But because all of us come to every opportunity that we have with our total being and our total selves, I was going into that with my counseling brain. And of course, people start to open up and people start to tell you all these things. And so there begin to be more and more and more overlap. Fast forward, didn't really know how to merge those two worlds, but they were merging for me. So just last year, I rebranded under Closet Therapy with Dina, in which I outwardly address anxiety, depression, and just basic overwhelm. You don't necessarily have to have a diagnosis in order to work with me, but a lot of clients do in general.
Okay.
And overwhelm in general is in the mental health realm in general. So I think a lot of organizers are working with clients with a lot of symptomology. We just address it very differently with Closet Therapy with Dina.
Okay, so I love your concept of mixing organizing with therapy. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, a lot of people are overwhelmed. Particularly women.
Absolutely.
We take on way too much.
Absolutely.
When it comes to like family, you know, work.
Absolutely.
All of that. So how did you know that, you know, mixing organizing with therapy would work? How did you know this was your thing?
Well, it's my thing because it's also who I am. When I was younger, my mom was just like, you were a slob. But So actually, I'm kind of a lazy person disguised as an organizer. I really don't want to do things twice. So I create the habits that supports a nice home. I want everything to look great. And so I'm super lazy. So I only want to touch it once. Mm-hmm. Right. And so going through grad school in general, you got to be on top of it. If you're a parent, you got to be on top of a whole lot of things in order to do things in a way that's productive for your family. You kind of really have to be organized, and if you want the results that you desire, I desire a life that's beautiful and organized and easily accessible. I am my own client as well. You know, going through the process of living life, I find that you get way more out of it when you're organized, when you know what's next. You also have to be kind of financially savvy as a single mom. You have to say, okay, it's winter. these clothes are going on sale because summer's coming. Mm-hmm. I can buy the next size. But in order to make room for that, or in order to keep up with that, you got to be strategic. And so I think all of us can use some of those techniques. And my real motivation is for the children. They get way more out of their lives if their mom is okay, if their mom is feeling good about where they are. And so a part of that is, you know, my way of helping kids as well. But it's really about women.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, so why is being disorganized and mental health so closely related? Because you see a lot of chronically disorganized people with, you know, different types of issues like ADHD, anxiety, whatever it is.
Right.
Why does it affect our mental health so much?
Well, a lot of the, I'm going to reverse engineer it. So a lot of the symptomology, let's say you've never struggled with mental illness and all of a sudden you become depressed or anxious, it would show up in your physical space. Some of the symptomology of depression is the lack of motivation to do the things you'd quote unquote normally do. If you're normally a neat person, and that's fallen by the wayside for a time frame much longer than 2 weeks or more, this is my diagnosis brain. That's a part of the symptomology of diagnosing depression, like being able to see things not the way they were. You don't have the motivation, energy, or anything like that to carry out those daily activities. We call them activities of daily living. And so a lot of times it shows up in your space. Now, if you're someone who suffers from mental illness and it affects your space, it's more about identifying the life you want to live, how you want your space. There's no cookie cutter. I know it's beautiful on Pinterest and Instagram, but your level of comfort in your space has to do with your functionality as well. So abnormal is only defined by what is abnormal for you. It's not normal for me to have my clothes all over the floor. But if your clothes are strategically in a pile, that may be your first level up, having them just separated into clean. And dirty may be a step in the right direction for you. So that crossroads is, it's difficult to navigate for some, but your anxiety, your depression kicks up and looks like a whirlwind in those environments. People who struggle with those disorders, it's going to be kicked up several notches. It may be normal for it to be like on a level one or two, but when you're having an episode, it may be 5, 6, or 7. So that's us defining what your normal is important up front. And because what we're doing is trying to create a baseline so that we can get you to the what's most functional and what's most normal and what's manageable for you given your set of circumstances. So on the back end, sometimes it shows up in our space. Sometimes on the front end, we could not know how to manage it during our times of extreme stress, depression, or chaos, if you will, overwhelm, if you will, when things are getting mentally tough during those times.
So then how do you start your process with organizing with someone who might have a mental health issue or is just generally overwhelmed, just generally doesn't know how to start? How do you do it? Do you spend time speaking with them first? Do you talk with them while you're organizing?
So I do a bit of a brief interview up front. I'm trying to find out what it is you're looking to do, what's keeping you from doing what you're looking to do. If I ask the hard questions up front, do you have a mental health diagnosis? Are you on medication? Are you in treatment of some sort? Are you seeing a therapist? And if I get into your space, sometimes I require someone who has a therapeutic history. I require the clients to make sure that they're in therapy, because I am also a, if you already have a therapist, I'm a support to what you guys are doing. I'm not your second therapist. That's not a real thing. So I do an extensive interview on the front end. Some people don't have a mental health diagnosis, but I'm focusing on what does your amazing look like? What does your outcome look like? What are we looking for? What are your obstacles? What are your strengths? And I'm building on that, no matter if you have a mental health disorder or you don't. But when you reveal that you do, I approach my anxious patients, clients, and my depressed clients very differently, because they require an extra set of tools that I bring with me, meaning how fast we go, how many breaks we need. I do some thought tracking, like, what are you thinking about this? You know, for example, a depressed client may have a negative thought pattern that reinforces the behavior of being orderly. They're telling themselves that they can't do this and they don't know how to do that. And so they repeat this pattern of thought that they can't get around. And so we're working on creating new thoughts and creating new habits through changing those thoughts as well. And so as a support to someone who's in therapy, where I'm just constantly reinforcing that if they're working on that in therapy, they may be working on something totally different. And so I just approach it as if you don't have a therapist, which is really finding the motivation behind what's going on, what's wrong, trying to get to the root slowly as we go, because, you know, some people have to build up to that. Some people are just let it flow on the first visit, and they give you all the information. But some people over time say, I really don't feel confident. I really only buy these clothes because I'm this size and I feel this way about my body. Okay, now we're getting into it. You don't want to give up the size 12, even though you're 18, or you don't want to give up the size 14s when you're 18 because right. The four sizes in the closet situation. Yeah. So it's really about embracing who you are. You know, I try to let the client guide me to where they want to be. I always ask them, what does amazing look like? What would that look like for you? Like, why am I here? Like, what am I doing here, just to declutter? If that's the thing, then that's the thing. But normally people are looking for something a little bit more than just clearing the space. Even though, you know, some people just want you to clear their crap. You know, we get them. I get them all different sizes, heights, and all different mindsets.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. So the short version of what I do is I talk to the clients extensively, and I ask questions that tend to be in the mental health realm about mindset and what their goals are, what they're looking for, what they're trying to do. What have you done in the past? You know, what has and has not worked? What can we build on? And what are your goals? How soon do you want to get this done? So I try to give them a realistic picture as to what I think can be done based on what they give me.
So do you think clutter can affect your overall well-being? So, you know, of course, making people more anxious, maybe unhealthy eating habits, maybe trouble like processing what's around them, trouble sleeping.
Absolutely. Visual clutter is like 6 million decisions that haven't been made. And so your brain processes the thing as like all these little decisions that need to be made. So if you walk into a room that's full of clutter, your brain is processing. So you're worn out just by looking at the clutter. Now, there are people that don't even see the clutter. They're just walking through life like, oh goodness, life is fine, even though you got
to
step over.
To be
over.
That oblivious to clutter.
But as I think you probably are, as a type A person, it would drive you crazy to have a million things all over the floor. You would not be able to relax. So you process that clutter as anxiety. It comes out as, oh my God, like I can't sit down until I get this stuff all over the floor, off
the
floor.
That's me, straight up.
Right? Right. So, but it is, imagine a million decisions. Imagine a decision in every piece of paper that's out of order. And so you're literally viewing your space as stressful. You're literally viewing your space as work. You know how some people can't work from home because they got to be doing the laundry and they got to be doing this and they got to be doing whatever. If you created a peaceful space for yourself that you could just go in this room and close the door, you could focus on the things that you want to get done more easily. And so the least amount of things that you possess, the least amount of decisions you need to make about those things. Do you need to clean it? Do you need to store it? Do you need to fold it? Do you need to all these things? So visual clutter for me definitely equals anxiety.
Oh yeah.
Definitely equals anxiety. So seeing all those decisions that we haven't made and don't know what to do is visual overwhelm. It's over the top for people. And that's why we get called, because within that clutter, there's no order. You don't know where to find things. Americans buy things 6 times because they can't find it in their homes. Mm-hmm. So it's also a financial benefit for us to get organized, because why would you go out and buy a light bulb that you could just have a bin that's just for light bulbs and go to that spot when you need a light bulb? And now you gotta, instead of, oh, I need a light bulb, I don't know where it is in this big mess, let me go to Home Depot. You just spent 6 times. I don't know if you guys know, but light bulbs are pretty expensive these days. Mm-hmm. And so imagine multiplying all the things that you can't find times 6 when we could just, oh, this is where the light bulbs live. This is, oh, I'm running out of light bulbs, but I have 4 more or whatnot. So that ease of, it's about efficiency. How can we make this more efficient so that you can have that time back cumulatively to do with that time what you want to do? Like spend time with your kids, spend time with your family, not worried about all those 25 things that you don't know where to find.
So why is it then that some people are okay with keeping the clutter around? Is it because they don't know how to start? Is it because maybe they don't realize that the clutter is the source of their anxiety or, overeating or whatever it is that they may be dealing with?
Right. Just like you just said, eating. Just like if I'm 45, so for 20 some years at least, I was subject to whatever my parents taught me. And if you lived in clutter, clutter is not a big deal for you. Or some people lived in clutter and don't want to live like that anymore. Everyone has a different story of how they get to where they are. But if you're used to a certain level of clutter in general, I know people that homes are clean, 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 but it is super unorganized. You may not have been taught how to be organized or how to live organized because your mom or dad or grandmother, whoever raised you, was not a very organized person, but they were a clean person. They just have piles, like the stack of mail is overflowing that everyone has on their kitchen counter, right? The multiple junk drawers and things like that. Mm-hmm. You just don't. Also, being organized is a learned behavior. So if you've never learned that behavior and you don't have a blueprint or pattern or you don't have those habits in place, you're going to have to develop those habits. Just like when you're trying to go on a diet, you're going to have to learn how to eat correctly or find the nutritional content of certain foods and things like that. But if you grew up eating Twinkies and Ho-Hos, then that's what your definition of nutrition or health is. And so sometimes it's just about learning new habits. And that's what we do. We teach our clients, oh, this is an option. Like I remember when I moved into my second house, and I had someone coming over just to welcome me and say hello, whatever. And he was just like, why are you lining your drawers? And I was just like, what? He was just like, why would you put liner on your shelves and in your drawers? And why do you have like a tray for your forks? I'm like, what?
Oh my God.
I'm looking like, why don't you?
Right.
Why don't you have a organizer for your forks, spoons? It's just all in one drawer. Then you just have to fish for them.
It's like a hodgepodge of stuff.
Right. Just like in his world, it was okay. Like it was complete. And I was trying not to be judgmental. My face was just like, what do you mean? What do you mean you don't have what your spoons are mixed with your forks? Like what's going on? Like my brain was about to explode. His brain was about to explode. Like, why are you? Cause at the time I was, unpacking the kitchen, which is the biggest job. You know, for me, I clean and do all, it was like a 2-day process, this space. And so he was asking these questions in my brain. I was just like, who doesn't have a drawer organizer, right? But people,
and they're so inexpensive too.
It's so inexpensive. Of course, I have the double decker one with the slide and all these contraptions.
The fancy one
because I know the value of all that stuff. But he was totally like, I was just like, you know, you can get this at like Dollar General. It doesn't have to be the one from the container, the $20 one. It could be the $4 one, or you can use office. You know, the little office drawer dividers if your right. space is weird. But he was just like, I just put it all in the drawer. And I was like, sir, no, absolutely not.
So then what are your top tips to helping people get to the right frame of mind to begin the decluttering process?
Ooh, a mindset is huge. Mindset is definitely huge. Deciding what it is, what's the end goal? You know, deciding why. Why do you want to do this? What do you think it's going to do for you? What do you think it's, what are the benefits for you? And what is it costing you not to do it? For some people, you know, people who are chronically late, it's costing them something. You're late for work because you can't find your outfit, or you can't find clean clothes, laundry, your clothes are all over the place. It's costing you something. It may be that promotion because you're late, when you could just iron these things out at home, create some order. Okay, underwear, bra, you know, create some order in your closet so you make it easier for yourself. Understanding what it's costing you is huge, you know, and understanding the benefit. The benefits that you identify will propel you forward. The cost will keep you from going back. And so I always work around mindset so that we could try to create permanent change for our clients. You know, I want to always work myself out of a job with a client. I don't need to be working with you doing the same thing for years and years. Now, if we're working around your home and we work seasonally, I have a client that I've been working with for like 3 years, but she's not the same person day one as she is year three. And she's like, she will probably always be my client. We work on projects around her home together. So to say, people always ask, oh, she must be a hoarder. No, she's a woman mm-hmm. who is overwhelmed. She experienced 2 to 3 deaths in her family. She's an mm-hmm. older woman. Mm-hmm. And she accumulated all of the things from those 3 people into her home. And so she, in the grief process, you can't deal with that many decisions at one time to say, oh, what should I keep? What should I give away? And how do I incorporate it into my life? So, you know, creating those mindset shifts for her happened over a period of time. The process was slow in the beginning because we're working, but towards the end, she's like, that's gotta go. That's gotta go. She's clearing it out because you're deciding what's most valuable. What's worth the real estate? You know, what's worth the real estate in your closet? You got to really think about the size of your closet and what you can afford to put in there. Some people have reach-ins, walk-ins. Some people have entire rooms dedicated to their clothing or their things. And you want to make sure that, you know, you're using your real estate to the best of the ability. I love capsule wardrobes. I love buying what I love. It keeps me from overspending when I was like, oh, I don't love that. Mm-hmm. If I don't love it, it doesn't need to really be in my closet. I don't feel amazing in it, I don't really need to be in my closet. So just identifying those things is helpful with creating permanent change through working with an organizer. And I think that's what we're supposed to do, work mm-hmm. ourselves out of a job, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned earlier the client that you were just talking about, that people thought she was a hoarder. So mm-hmm. I just want to note that most people aren't hoarders. And a lot of times people might think that they are a hoarder when they're reaching out to you. Mm-hmm. But trust and believe, a hoarder won't reach out to you.
Oh, no. The hoarder is the last person to reach out to you. Actually, their therapist or their family member or someone would reach out to you before they actually would.
Right.
So those people need to be in long-term therapeutic situations outside of the organizer, in addition to the organizer, in addition to the team that's working to get their spaces cleared. And their levels of hoarding, you know, it's based on accessibility. Can you get in and out of the home easily? Hygiene, safety. It's based on a lot of criteria, but it's based on level of impairment. How impaired is your house due to the things you can't let go of? Like, can you not get in the door? Do you have an animal in this space? Is it not safe for you to be in this space? Are you not able to maintain your space? You know, but the majority of the time, people just use the terminology not really knowing what it is. People are just overwhelmed and don't know what to do with their things. Sometimes people paint these pictures and I get there, I'm like, oh, this is easy. Like, this is no big deal, right? It's like, what were you talking about? Right, what were you like, girl, we can just knock this out. Like, exactly. No big deal. But they paint these pictures because for them, it does feel overwhelming because they can't get to work on time or they can't find anything or they just have to step over things. Yeah, we get it. But the key of it is we are amazing consumers. Americans are amazing consumers. We don't know how to give anything away. That's the issue. We don't know how to get rid of things at all. We bring it in, but where does it go? You know, we don't have a system for saying, oh, this t-shirt has worn out its welcome. It has holes in it. Some people will keep them. Like, what am I going to do with this? You're going to use it as a rag? You're going to walk around the house in it? Like, we don't give things away cyclically. Like, every 3 months or twice a year, like, we don't get rid of things at the rate that we consume, we don't get rid of things half as often as the amount of things that we bring into our home. Shoppers, oh my goodness. Shoppers, really. If you would not shop as often as you shop if you actually knew what was in your closet and you had it organized so that you can see things.
Right.
Out of sight is out of mind. That's my brain works that way. I don't even own a chest or drawer. Like, I don't, everything is, I have a few little drawers in my closet, but I need to see it so that I'll wear it. And so people with price tags on things and bringing bags in all the time, half of it is, you know, that stimulation you get from shopping. But if you actually looked in your closet to see what you need, what you love, what you like, we wouldn't do half the amount of shopping that we are immaculate consumers. We just don't give anything away.
So what about maintaining focus? How hard is it for someone to maintain focus when it comes to becoming organized and staying organized as well?
Yeah. If you don't have the skill at all, it's going to take some time. It's really going to take some time to create the habits. You're creating the habit of taking something off the hanger, take the hanger, put it in the empty hanger section, because that's a thing I love, and putting things back where they belong, not overspending, buying what we need. You know, it's you're breaking old habits and creating a whole new way of being, a whole new way of thinking. And so staying motivated in that, I do a little at a time. If you're not working with someone that can hold you accountable and keep you on track, because organizers, probably 70% of our job is accountability.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We're just showing up so that you're going to get your butt in gear and get this thing done, right?
Right.
Some people don't know how to do it, and some people just don't make the time to do it. By hiring and committing and paying the money, someone's going to be here from 10 to 2 or whatever time you book with them. You got to get some things done. And so that accountability, having someone there, you can work 3-4 hours. But if you don't have that motivation and you don't have that conviction to do it, set a timer. You know, set a timer for however much time you have to spend and put some music on and get to it. You know, it's an ongoing process. So if you need to break it up, you have an hour, bang out an hour. If you have 20 minutes, go through the room and find everything that looks like trash. Find everything that looks like you don't want it anymore. Those are easy decisions that you can make and big wins.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have some little wins so you can like be motivated to do it again. Like, oh, I can do this. I can do trash. Easy. Yay, me. Like, check that off. I did an hour.
Yeah,
yay.
Right.
Whatever. So set yourself up for success. Little positive reinforcement. I get to have tea after I work for an hour or whatever, wine, whatever you think is. Right? And just get it done as in small increments if you need to. Or hire somebody, of course. Closet therapy with Dina. Or
go ahead, girl. Promote yourself.
Right.
Okay. So have you ever encountered a client that was just resistant to the entire process of organizing? And if so, how did you handle that situation?
Well, my prayer is, and I do pray about clients. My prayer is that I get clients who are ready for change, because you know, to get someone, to invite someone to your home and pay for them to be there, my hope is that you're ready for what we have to offer or what we're going to work on. I'm never going to push you to do something you don't want to do. I'm going to strongly encourage. I'm going to point out the reasons you cited in our previous phone conversation, that you wanted me here, you know, that you wanted me to be here, and try to identify what the resistance is. Sometimes it's just, okay, you don't know how to do this. Okay, let's break it down very, very simply. I learned from one of my clients early on that it's not about the money of having me there. It was about the shame associated with having me there, which was eye-opening to me, because I just assumed that you know what's going on, that you call me because you have a problem. I don't think of the problem as something associated with your value, or I don't look down on you because your house is overwhelmed. We have 3 kids and a full-time job. Like, something's going to be awry. Like, if nothing's awry, you must probably have a staff. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard being a parent. It's hard being staying on top of these things. Even though organizing makes your life easier, but if you don't have that skill set up front, things can go awry very easily if you don't have that skill set. So sometimes it's the shame that's associated with things that get people stuck. Like, they're really in their heads about me being there. Like, oh my God, you probably think I'm X, Y, and Z. You probably think da, da, da. Actually, I don't. I think you're courageous for calling. I think you're amazing for calling. I think you're stepping up for yourself, for calling someone in to help you. And so that's a big deal, and you should be excited that I'm here, because I'm here to help you reclaim your life. Like, you're reclaiming this space in your life, which, trust and believe, that momentum that's created in that session carries through to other areas of your life. So it's the thing that we do. Sometimes we doubt what we, our value. Organizers, especially early in the organizer, you doubt your value. Mm-hmm. That energy that they're paying for, that you bring to the space, that doesn't stop when you leave, when your time is up at 2 o'clock, clocking out, you're pulling out of the driveway. That energy keeps going. The reason I know is because sometimes I go home and gut something in my house because of the energy's moving. That same energy is moving for our clients. And that, so even after we leave, they have benefits and value added. They get things done in their homes that they would not necessarily do, because we've created this mindset of saying, oh, toss, trash, donate, mm-hmm. whatever system we just taught them,
right.
That energy's still moving, energy's still going. It would be a great benefit if they took advantage of it. Some people just want to sit down and are exhausted afterwards, but the energy is, the momentum has been built, and it keeps going for our clients. So,
as a coach, how do you hold people accountable for continuing the skills that you've introduced them to?
So when I'm in a coach, in my coaching capacity, where we're just working over the phone, you're doing a lot of mindset shifts. If you come to, let's say you have a homework assignment and we're working on a goal that you set, before we get off the phone on our phone conversation, I ask you, how are you going to feel when this thing is done? We're going to begin with the end in mind. Begin with the end result in mind. So if you're going to feel amazing when this closet is completed, let's think about that. Let's think about, oh my God, it's going to be so amazing when I'm done. That way you aren't stuck in, oh my God, I got to do this. No, I get to do this. That mindset shift is very different. And so going into it helps propel the client into doing the thing that they once thought of as difficult or hard or whatnot. I get to this, I'm gonna feel amazing afterwards. And so when you're coming back for the next session, in coaching, if it's purely coaching, you have an information sheet that you fill out before you get to my call. So I need that information sheet from you that says, these are my set intentions. This is what I accomplished. If I didn't accomplish it, why? What happened? What I learned? Right? And so that's your accountability for, you're not going to get on this call and BS. You are accountable to you as well as to me. If you don't reach your goals, we're going to talk about why you either did or did not fill out your form correctly. You lied, you're lazy, or whatever. And I'm going to call you on it. You know, that accountability in general, accountability is huge.
Yeah.
You know, like you pay for your gym membership and you pay for your trainer. He's standing there waiting on you for your session. I'm standing there waiting on you for your session. Just being at the finish line waiting at 9 a.m. we have a call schedule gets 70% more things done that you wouldn't get. When I work with a coach, even if it was the day before, if I knew I had a coaching session with Lisa, was her name, if I had a coaching session with Lisa, who's amazing, I'm way more likely to get that thing done than if I just set a goal for myself, because Lisa's waiting, right? Mm-hmm. And so her presence in general is some accountability, but in the coaching capacity, you have to be willing and courageous enough to say, why didn't you get this thing done? What were your obstacles? What are we going to do different? What did we learn? That's how we're holding people accountable in that. Okay, do we need to put this goal on the sheet again? Because ultimately, you know, you are responsible for your progress. The coach is there to make sure that we have the appropriate plan in place, to try to identify any roadblocks that we have. But all of that is breaking down your likelihood for failure, if you will. We're trying to build you up for success by identifying those things. So you are your own accountability. I'm my own accountability, being there, calling you on it, saying it out loud, because people don't really do that. People don't say, girl, you full of shit.
Right.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cuss. But, you know, we are, as a coach, you're saying to people, what happened? What's wrong? What got in the way? You know, you have to answer those questions, and that's really your accountability in there.
Well, Dina, you have given us so many great nuggets of information.
Hey.
Thank you so much for being on the show. Tell our listeners how they can find you.
I am on Instagram, closet_therapy with Dina. Facebook, Closet Therapy with Dina. And my name is Dina Smith, so you can find me on Facebook. I'm a little mohawk wearing black lady. So yeah, Instagram, Facebook, my number is, and my email address is closettherapywithdina@gmail.com. Phone number 678-358-0061. I'm out.
All right, so make sure y'all call Dina, send her an email.
Hey, hey.
Like and follow her.
Like and follow me.
Send her a DM.
Send me a DM. Mic check. This has been amazing. I just want to say thank you. I've never been on a podcast before. This is my first. So thank you so much for popping my podcast. Cherry. Sorry, is this 18 and up? I'm sorry. Naeem is amazing, you guys. Thank you.
Anyway.
Yes. So proud of you in this space, too.
Thank you.
Stepping out, stepping up. Get it, girl.
So thank you, everyone, for listening. And join us next week for an all-new episode of Organize Me Radio.
Bye.
Make sure to follow me on all social media platforms. You can find me on Facebook, Pinterest, and YouTube under Restore Order Professional Organizing. Instagram is Restore_Order_Organizing. And then Twitter is @RestoreOrder. Also, subscribe to my podcast on whichever platform you're listening to. And remember, get organized, go further. You're listening to Organize Me Radio. I'm Naeema Ford Goldson.